Mining magnate Chris Ellison is forging ahead with a bid to have a lawsuit mounted against him by a sacked contracts manager thrown out, insisting the claim be cleansed or remain shielded from public view. The bitter legal battle began almost a fortnight ago when Sydney-based Harmer's lawyers, who were representing former procurement manager Stephen Pagozzo, launched the legal action in the federal court. Mineral Resources, Mr. Ellison and their high-profile lawyers at Bennett & Co. are all named as parties to the action, which reportedly contains 155 paragraphs laying bare Mr. Pagozzo's experience during his time with the mining giant. The legal action came just 48 hours after failed peace talks prompted the Ellison-led company to sue Mr. Pagozzo over allegations he collected secret commissions and misused the mining giant's confidential information, which allegedly led to his sacking in January of this year. But within hours of the second claim being lodged, Bennett & Co. sought a court order to prevent the media from obtaining or reporting any of the information contained within it. The court has since restricted access to various documents filed as part of the case until at least 4 p.m. today. During a four-hour court hearing today, Mineral Resources' lawyer Stephen Pengelis told the court the contents of the statement of claim offended legal principles and contained serious allegations which were egregious and not properly pleaded. Subsequently, he argued it should be thrown out or cleansed before being released for public inspection. He went as far as to describe one of the pleadings as scandalous, demanding it be redacted. Harmer's lawyer's legal counsel is continuing to respond to the submissions in the federal court this afternoon, after which time the court is expected to make a judgment on the applications. And in other news, outgoing WA Police Deputy Commissioner and former vaccine commander Gary Drabergs will join the private sector as a senior executive in technology firm Genvis, the company behind the state's G2G self-quarantine app. He will head strategic partnerships for the company as the Leaderville-based business gears up to sell its successful public safety platform to authorities in other jurisdictions, including overseas. The visual AI company was founded in 2017 by former 40 Under 40 winner Kristen Butcher and is establishing a presence in Canada, where it believes the similarities between the Australian governance, justice and law enforcement structures provide opportunities to grow its market. It believes the platform used to run the G2G suite of products is capable of being used as the backbone of many other public safety applications. Mr. Drabergs established Operation Tide to lead the operational roles of the WA Police during the pandemic and worked closely with the company to create the technology required to automate home quarantine. He then became vaccine commander in January. He was considered as a possible contender for the role of WA Police Commissioner following the appointment of outgoing Commissioner Chris Dawson, who will replace Kim Beazley as the state's governor. But he took himself out of contention and tendered his resignation, ending a 40-year career. And in property news, 5-8 has bought 853 Hay Street for $6.2 million, the Tattarang Property Division's third acquisition since April. The Andrew and Nicola Forrest-led group bought the two-storey office building from Harry Coney of Universal Sand Supplies. The building was previously a branch of Bank West under the Rural and Industries Bank of WA. Last year, the City of Perth received an application to house a robotic cocktail bar and nightclub within the building, which was lodged by My Place Bar co-owner Michelle Rosenberg. Business News understands the proponents are submitting an application for a nearby venue to house the nightclub on Wellington Street instead.
We understand that business relies on being informed. That's why Business News is your most reliable source of news, industry insights, and business connections. To stay fully informed, we encourage you to subscribe to our emails, flick through our magazine, and visit businessnews.com.au for daily news updates. It's the best way to ensure you have the information you need to be future ready. Business News. More news, more insights, more connections.
There are many reasons for you as political editor, Gary, to sit down with John McKechnie, the Commissioner of the Corruption and Crime Commission here in Western Australia, going as far back as the 1990s with the Andrew Mallard case through to some modern concerns, particularly in the political realm. There was one particular issue that it seems you were eager to address in this article, Gary, which graces the cover of our latest edition, and that is political donations from property developers.
Yeah, he's got some strong views on that. He first points out to me that donations from property developers are banned, certainly in New South Wales and Queensland, and wonders why that's not the same situation here. He said that we haven't got the model of political donations to political parties right. He said we haven't got it right, and it's something that does concern him. He didn't go into specific details about issues around political donations here in WA, but, you know, I mean, this is a guy who's had decades as a jurist, an investigator, if you like, the former director of public prosecutions, a Supreme Court judge, and now the Corruption and Crime Commissioner. So when he talks about his concerns that we need to address the political donation system, I understand that it's worth publicising. And look, political parties talk a big game on donations, but they very rarely follow through. The Labor government in WA right now is no different. They had a big plan before 2017 where they said that it was time to bring the donation system into the digital age, suggesting that, you know, you'd almost see real-time donations. So Joe Blow donates and it gets put up onto a website so you can see it. You don't have to wait. And people probably don't realise that we as journalists have to wait until after elections to see who funded them. We can't see that in real time. Why not? If you want to be transparent, gold standard transparency, what's there to hide? And that was the point that Labor was making before 2017. They said that voters had a right to see who was funding political parties before they went to the poll. Well, then put up or shut up. And I got a sense that John McKechnie has views around this, and he certainly wanted to air them. There's lots of matters that we discussed in this magazine piece that we put together, but that was certainly one of them that stuck out to me.
I think the one that stuck out to me besides that was the relationship with John Quigley, because not too long ago they were on different sides of a very big issue.
Were they ever? Look, you know, for people that have been around a while like myself, to think that the Attorney General now, John Quigley, and that John McKechnie as the CCC Commissioner would be having to work together and have a relationship is quite extraordinary. You know, you go back to that Andrew Mark Mallard case. He's the young man at the time in the 1990s who was charged and convicted and jailed for 12 years. He spent in jail 12 years for the murder of Mosman Park jeweller Pamela Lawrence. I mean, it was mortal combat between John Quigley, who later became Mallard's lawyer, and, of course, John McKechnie, who had been the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecutions, who actually recommended, when the police came to him, that they go ahead and charge Mallard. There have been so much said about that case between these two men that John McKechnie, in the magazine piece, describes their relationship at the time as one of mutual loathing. Now, they seem to have a pretty good relationship. And of course, as we touch on in the magazine piece, the Attorney General had to go into bat to bring back John McKechnie for a second 5-year term after a upper house committee vetoed his reappointment. So you've got Quigley, who couldn't stand McKechnie, suddenly saving his job, if you like. Strange times.
And just on that topic as well, because the laptop, particularly Phil Edmund's laptop, was central to that conflict.
Phil Edmund, the former Liberal MP, who became part of an expenses wrought investigation by the CCC. It then turns out that there's certain material on a laptop and videos and so on that according to Edmund himself, would be enough to bury people's careers. And this laptop became a real source of concern for the CCC because there was this power play around privilege that Parliament said that the CCC shouldn't be able to access the laptop because it was the laptop of a Member of Parliament and therefore there would be matters on there that would be considered privileged, led to a legal stoush. Eventually there was a resolution in that the CCC have been able to get access to that laptop. Now, that's interesting because so much was made of it. Partly, you know, the reasons that John McKechnie had to sort of be in hiatus for 14 months before he was reappointed was while this fight was going on. So much was made about it. I asked him, do you think you owe the public now an explanation as to what came of your examination of that laptop, whether it's an examination that showed that there was no more wrongdoing or that there are other issues? He said, possibly. But he did make the point. He said the laptop story is not over yet and he wouldn't be drawn any further. So whether they have gone to that laptop and found some other matters that concern them, that involve, you know, people in the public sector or the former politician himself, we'll have to wait and see. But that laptop matter is still playing out now. And of course, Phil Edmund has just been charged and appeared in court in relation to going to people who were getting caught up in this whole saga and warning them of the Triple C investigation. That's the allegation. He's said he's not guilty on all that, and so we'll have to have a trial later in the year at this point in time. So that saga just goes on and on.
And he has some views on integrity broadly and at a federal level, but I just want to ask about that hiatus period.
Oh, yeah, 14 months.
What he was doing over that time.
Well, here you go. I'll tell you what he was doing. One of the things that's close to his heart is the story of a Western Australian story around a murder that took place at Government House, you know, the one just down on St George's Terrace. It was in 1925 when a woman strolled into the Government House ballroom where the St John of God annual ball was taking place, and she pulled a revolver out and shot a man at close range, and he died. And he says, John McKechnie, that his ambition to turn that into a theatrical play, the whole story of murder in the ballroom, is what it would obviously be titled. And not a lot of people would know that. I quickly checked because I'd never heard it, and I quickly checked, and absolutely, according to the State Library, that's exactly what happened. A lady called Audrey Jacob was charged, and believe it or not, even though she told the coppers who came to the ballroom that night, you know, to find her victim in a pool of blood, she said, yeah, I did it. She got off the murder. And so John McKechnie is fascinated by all that and reckons it'll make a great play. So during that 14 months when he could do nothing other than wait to see how this played out, he was working on pulling it together as a theatrical production.
Do you think that he danced agonisingly close to murder on the dance floor as a Sophie Ellis-Bextor?
Well, I'm not sure that he's heard of Sophie Ellis-Bextor. The next time I'm speaking to him, I'll ask him. But yeah, I mean, maybe that will be the theme playing in the background. I reckon, given that it happened in 1925, it's more likely to be sort of some jazz music or something playing.
Maybe it can be like a Hamilton type up, don't
you? Yeah, maybe.
Now, he's back in the job. Reappointment came last year, and that obviously came amid a pretty intense discussion around an independent commission against corruption at a federal level.
Yeah.
And he shared, Mr. McKechnie, that is, shared his views on the need for a federal integrity body.
Totally. he's gobsmacked that there isn't one already. He says, you know, when you weigh up where the risks of corruption are in the public sector and you do all these programs to try and minimise the risk, and you try to educate public servants around the risk, and you have corruption agencies in places like WA and in Queensland and New South Wales, he goes, well, why are the feds any different? Why wouldn't the federal government, you know, as a being, be at risk of corruption? And he's got a very strong view that something should have been put in place years ago. Obviously, the federal Labor government now have a plan to do that. So he absolutely supports the need for a federal body to look specifically at corruption in the public sector of the federal government. There are certain elements that look at, you know, integrity of border force officers or obviously police officers, but he says there needs to be something right there at the grassroots level of public service in this country, and that's the federal government and in Canberra, and he can't believe that there isn't one. So, yeah, he's very much in favour of it.
Mm. And it's not as if he's jumping his shadows. He talks a bit at the end of your article about corruption more as a perception problem and the need for transparency to shine a light on these issues before they become a matter of corruption.
Yeah, he pulls up the old, you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant. He's right. You know, when he goes, and he does return back to the discussion around political donations and so on, he's just saying that you know, if we really want to minimise the risk of that, and governments should want to do it themselves, then the transparency of who donated what and when should be very clear. You're not necessarily going to get into the reasons why, but one of the things he did say to me was, why would someone wanted to donate to both political parties? He said it's not being done out of a conviction for a political party. He said it's done out of a will to gain influence. And so, you know, he doesn't mince his words on that. He says, well, if you're going to have full transparency, then surely the public have a right to know who's donated what and when, because it could be pivotal to something that's happening in the background in relation to a project or a development or whatever the case may be. So he's very strident on that. He also made the point that the CCC Act is currently being reviewed, because it's been around for, you know, nearly 20 years. It's up for review. He doesn't have a lot of power over the political donation system, but he certainly said that anyone that thought that a body like the Corruption and Crime Commission should have more say and more vision into what's going on, they should make a submission around the notion of political donations. And he's very supportive of that as well.
Don't anticipate an essay-style review where the body gets gutted, do you?
No, I don't, because, you know, John Quigley appears to be, and the Premier, you know, appear to be very supportive of it. Their budget's gone up notionally in the last budget, so it's not like there's an attempt to wind it back. You know, we know that a body like the CCC can undo a government. Alan Carpenter certainly would remember the days when some of his ministers were in the gun. So it's not that long ago. We certainly know that, you know, back in the mid-2000s, hearings that were held by the corruption body went after lobbyists and so on, and had quite dramatic effects on the life and careers of Brian Burke, Julian Grill, etc. So they are a dangerous service to have in the background for government, but absolutely necessary, and it'd be a brave government to start to wind back an organisation like that one.
I'm sure we could talk about much of this discussion for many more minutes, but unfortunately the format of the podcast means that we're done.
That's it.
That's it. No more. Gary, thank you so much.
This podcast was brought to you by Optus Stadium, now taking orders for your next breakfast or lunch meeting. If you like what you've heard, head to our Spotify page to like and subscribe. New episodes of At Close of Business are available every day in time for our afternoon wrap. I'm Jordan Murray. See you tomorrow.